From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Mark Report. It's the 15th day of April 2010, Tax Day. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group. He's in Decatur, Illinois. Well, we're closing in on the end of our drive for support of this program and agriculture at Illinois Public Media. And if you haven't yet reached into your back pocket to provide a little financial support, the time has come. Dial in right now at 217-244-9455. Hey, let's say $20 a month. You can do that, can't you? Sure. The number again is 217-244-9455. Dial now. We've 5 minutes until we talk with Dan. In the second half hour of our program today on some of these radio stations and online at willag.org, another reason you should dial the number, we'll talk with Randall Gordon of the National Grain and Feed Association. There's lots happening on the Hill, and much of it's going on right now. He'll give us an update from the end-user's perspective. Speaking of perspective and D.C., we've news on crop insurance commissions and how USDA's fundamental picture is setting up a volatile price scenario for the growing season. Thursdays are always good on the Closing Mark Report, and today is shaping up to be especially fun. So dial the number, 217-244-9455, and set back for a good ride.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
In Chicago on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. Nearby May wheat at 474¾, up 5½ cents on its, well, that's not its settlement price. That's the previous day price. We'll take a look at its settlement price this afternoon. That May futures finished at 480¼, up 5½. July at 492¾, up 5½. And September, a settlement there at 509¾, up 5½ cents. July in Kansas City, 507½, up 6 cents for the hard red. Back in Chicago from the corn pit, May futures 363¼, up 5¼. July at 373¾, up 5¼. September 384¼, up 5½, and December 394¼, up a nickel on the day. May beans at 984, 15 cents higher. July at 993, up 16. August at 988¾, 17 higher. Next year's November at 961, up 14¾. May bean meal at 281.90, settlement price up 7.60. Oil at $40.07, up 21. April live cattle, 98 bucks, 87½ higher. April feeders at 112.25, up 40. And April lean hogs at 77.80, up 37½. This is Illinois Public Media. Outside markets on the afternoon, crude oil futures. Nearby May contract, $85.52, down 32. The June unchanged at $86.73. May ethanol at $1.57⅞, a penny and 6 cents higher. Natural gas at $4.50, down 19¼. And the heating oil or diesel fuel, 0.9% higher at $2.25⅕. Gold futures at $1,159.70, a settlement price up 70 cents. And the Dow at 11,151. Just about 28 points higher on the day. The U.S. dollar at 80.48 is up 0.29, and the CRB index at 279.75 is down 0.21 on the afternoon.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers.
All right,
more information is
yet
at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Oh, hate it when that happens. Have you dialed the number yet? 217-244-9455. Now is the time to do it because we need your help to make sure that agricultural programming continues to boom out across Illinois and Indiana. And Illinois Public Media wants to take care of your marketing and weather needs. We try to do it each and every day right here on this radio station. If it makes a difference to you, please do call in with your financial aid. The number to call is 217-244-9455. Remember, this is a partnership between the University of Illinois, the radio station, and you, the listener. In fact, you, the listener, come up with about 40% of the programming dollars. That's right, 40%. So dial the number now. We do need your help. The number is 217-244-9455. We like to start at a $100 bill. More or less is great. This is Illinois Public Media. On a Thursday afternoon, Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group is with us to take a look at what's been happening in the world of agricultural futures. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Hey, Dan, to begin with, I heard you talking with Mike Impondere, the director of ag programming here at the station, Dave Dickey, this morning about the importance of the programming that comes from Illinois Public Media and what it does for farmers across the listing area. Do you often hear from them that they've talked or heard you on the air and want to have questions? I want to ask you a question directly.
Yes, I do. And, of course, the wintertime, I spend a lot of time going to different farm events, whether it's a farm show or a commodity organization meeting or whatnot. And I do travel outside of our listening audience. And as soon as I start speaking, everybody comes up and tells me, you must be Dan Zwicker because I hear you on the Internet. So, you know, I think hats off to WILL Ag Programming. You're not only serving the Illinois, Indiana farmer, as well as some of the fringes down in Kentucky. I do pick up 580 when I'm down visiting our elevators in Kentucky, in southern Indiana. So it goes all the way down in Kentucky and all the way on up into far northern Illinois. So WILL Ag Programming goes beyond the two-state area here. And I would say anybody that's listening to us on the Internet, I would encourage you to send a donation to WLL to keep the ag programming going here. We're in desperate need of some financial help. And like I mentioned this morning, the thing that WLL gives you that nobody else gives you is a variety of people that look at the market from different angles. And I think that is of tremendous value. You're not going to find that in a market advisory service of any kind, but you're just going to see it from their angle, where WLL will give you several opinions and ways of looking at the market throughout the week.
No, Dan, thank you so much. You did a magnificent job. We appreciate that. And if you agree with Dan, give us a call, 217-244-9455. If you're listening online, willpledge.org. The home radio station is WILL. It's the public radio station on campus, and we do cooperate with affiliates across Illinois so that you might be listening on another radio station. That could be WGFA out of Watseka, WHPO out of Hoopston. You could be in Clinton listening to WHOW, WKEI in Kewaunee. You might be hearing us at WTIM in Taylorville. If it's one of those radio stations, when you do call the number, 217-244-9455, please do tell them which radio station you're listening to and tell them you're listening to agriculture. They need to write that down so we can keep track of it. The radio station, call letters that is, and ag. It's awfully important. Wellpledge.org or 217-244-9455. And if you're on one of the commercial radio stations, call them, too. Call that local commercial radio station and simply thank them for running the program, especially if it makes a difference to you, because they need to know it as well. All right, Dan, let's talk about the marketplace this afternoon. I listened to you a bit talking with Dave about some of those things that you were looking at in the technicals. Are things getting better as we go through the afternoon today?
Well, from the technical point of view, the bulls all got good buy signals in corn here yesterday. And, of course, you can kind of look at the type of up move we had yesterday, even though we didn't maybe finish at the upper end of the range, but we did regain that here today. We are getting some follow through. We've busted above some important moving average levels that usually trigger a lot of technical buying. We've busted above the downtrend line on the charts connecting the January high with the March highs. We have broken above those that downtrend line. So if you're a corn bull, you got what you wanted or was waiting for. So the green lights now are on at least to try to do some recovery here of this big decline that we've had basically since January.
You have an upside potential?
Well, I think initially you kind of got to say we'll maybe regain maybe half of what we lost over the last 3 to 4 weeks or off of the March 1st high. The May corn, 50% retracement. May corn here is about 368. I think the that number is about 387, so it does look like there's maybe another 10 or 15 cents up before we hit into some resistant levels. There is some resistance, some moving average resistance on July corn here around 77, 78, but the upward momentum here of the past couple days does suggest we're probably going to plow through that and go on up into the at least the 380s here on July corn. And we'll take one step at a time. The fundamentals are such that export demand has picked up significantly here over the past couple weeks. You can see last week the sales came in right at a million tons, and you can count the million ton sales, weekly sales, on one hand that we've had this year. So it does show that we are competitively priced in the world market, and we are getting some uptick there. Now, I do know that planting activity is going gangbusters no matter about where you're at in the Corn Belt, and it does look like we're going to put this crop in a record timely fashion. But I think some of the dry weather is already starting to worry the market somewhat. That maybe we got what we asked for, and we probably maybe wish that we didn't ask for it probably before it's over with.
All right. So very quickly, do you think it's the dry weather conditions that have pushed us along? Is it outside influence? Are you scared of inflation?
Well, I think it's a combination of things. I think the key thing is that farmers are busy planting, and they're done selling, and they're at price levels that the farmer just decided that if he's going to take these prices or lower, it's going to be later in the growing season. It's not going to be now. And like I said, export demand has picked up, so there is a need for the market to pull some inventory into the pipeline. So I think that is it. The market got terribly bearish after those reports here of a couple weeks ago. Just basically ran out of sellers. We did have a good break in the dollar. That, I think, helped bring in some demand. So I think it was a combination of things that's all kind of come together here and given us a rally. I know we feel like we've rallied a bunch, but when you look at the chart of how much we've lost since January, this is just basically a little bounce so far. But I do think if we do show some follow-through and start closing above the 380 in July corn, I think it does open the door for a bigger spring rally than what anybody would have thought we were going to have, just 4, 5, 6 days ago.
Dan, can you stay with us for a bit yet this afternoon?
Sure can.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so here's a couple of things. We'll talk with Dan again in a moment, but if you're listening online or you're listening to the radio station and you haven't dialed in yet, please do this. It's 217-244-9455. It really does make a difference. Our own Director of Ag Programming for Illinois Public Media is in studio with us. Dave Dickey has some updates. Good afternoon to you, Dave.
Good afternoon to you, Todd.
Hey, you had a good fundraising morning this morning with Dan, didn't you?
We certainly did have a great fundraising morning with Dan. In fact, we blew the doors off the Strategic Farm Marketing Challenge this morning. We heard from 29 callers, 29 people in support of agriculture. We only needed to hear from 25 for Strategic Farm Marketing to contribute $500. We thank Strategic Farm Marketing and all those people that contributed throughout the day. We just got this in. This came in along with a web pledge just a moment ago. It says, my husband and I operate a small family farm in central Illinois. Listening to the ag programs and other assorted programs is how we spend our days in the tractor's combine. You have pestered us enough this week that I finally remember to get off the tractor and donate something. Thanks so much. So I'm going to pester some more. 217-244-9455 is the number to call. And because 2 days straight, our agricultural audience has blown the doors off the challenge in the morning, I'm going to put $150 out of my own back pocket in the kitty this afternoon. I looked in my wallet. That's all that was in there, $150. If we hear from 20 callers this afternoon, I'm going to throw that $150 in the kitty as well.
All right. You can get in Davey's back pocket if you want. 217-244-9455. That's the number to call. 217-244-9455. Pledge your financial support for Ag Programming at Illinois Public Media. This afternoon, we're talking, of course, with Dan Zwicker. He's at ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois. Let's take up the soybean market at this time. Do the technicals look as good there as they do in the corn?
Yes, they do. We've been kind of coiling into a long-term wedge formation, basically drawn off of the early February low along the March low, and then on the top side, it was kind of like the February high along with the March highs. And we broke through that here today. So we're actually in new highs for the move, basically since early February. So the technicians are quite friendly, the bean market, based upon this type of action. I think your chart people, probably what they're going to look for, if we would see some solid follow-through and maintain some closes in this July beans above this 990 here going into next week, you'll probably hear a lot of people begin to start talking about 1050 beans, whether or not we have enough muscle to get up there. I'll take one day at a time on that, but I do know that the South American farmers are very tight holders of their new crop inventory, and the supply of South America is not moving into the export channels as quickly as a lot of people were betting on, and that's kind of what's given us a reason to kind of rally here, as well as the other outside market influences that we have, Todd.
Is it safe to say that we have abundant supplies of both corn and soybean at this time, and unless we have a weather problem, that's not going to change?
Well, let's say we have an adequate supply. I don't know if I want to quite use the word abundance, because as back in the days when you worked for me in the mid-'80s, that is what we called an abundant supply.
Yeah.
When you had a half a crop in the bin. We're not there yet. Now, maybe wheat, we're kind of there. But I know people like to get bearish on a 2 billion bushel carry out on corn and a 300 million bushel carry out maybe on beans. But when you take into account the amount of usage now, stocks to use ratio, it's not all that burdensome. So we all know how Mother Nature, 2 weeks of bad weather, can change the supply equation very quickly. And I think until we get further down the road in knowing what size of crop we are actually going to have, the markets can worry and put weather premium into prices.
Dan, thanks so much for being with us today.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker is with ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens each and every Thursday afternoon. Now is the time, really, to pick up the phone. I know it's been waiting on your side. You've been listening to Dan, so here we go. Make them ring. They'll answer them. I guarantee it. 217-244-9455. That is the number to call. Let me say it again. 217-244-9455. And if you call right now, we would appreciate it. And if you're listening online, willpledge.org is the place to go, isn't it, Dave Dickey?
Indeed it is. Willpledge.org or 217-244-9455. Several people to thank who made contributions today. First wave here, Abigail Mathewson. I want to thank them. I want to say thank Peter Rooney, Alan Broister. I want to thank Alan, Walter and Betty Steiner, Gail Campmeyer, J.B. Edmondson, Alan and Tracy Norcross, and Jim and Jenna Allman. 217-244-9455 is the number to call.
Here's a quick news note for the afternoon. Officials in Washington, D.C. are working on the second draft of an agreement on the federal crop insurance program. Earlier this week, when we talked with Bob Thompson from U of I, he mentioned the commissions insurers garner from that program. USDA's Rod Bain reports those are under scrutiny.
This week, USDA's Risk Management Agency and participating insurance agents of the Federal Crop Insurance Program are negotiating a new standard reinsurance agreement. RMA Administrator Bill Murphy says
the talks have been going very well.
The current review is of comments on a second draft of the SRA and just how much a rate of reasonable return to insurers should be under the new agreement.
We're at about 14% return, and I think everybody feels we're getting pretty close to what the expected reasonable rate of return should be under the program.
The administrator says crop insurers have been negotiating in a good spirit at this point.
They are critical to the success the program has enjoyed up to date. There's no doubt about it. Having the private industry involved, they understand insurance, they can explain it to the consumer, and help the consumer make the proper judgment on what product to buy.
Murphy says the goal is to have a final version of the SRA available by no later than early May, and an agreement signed and in place by the end of June. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Corn and soybeans are just a couple of the many crops covered by the federal crop insurance programs. Those programs are supposed to help farmers survive the financial ups and downs of the marketplace and protect them in especially volatile price years. U of I Ag economist Daryl Good thinks this season may be one of more rather than less volatile price action and says that its start, as you'll hear, is fundamentally different than last year. Fundamentals is a term that deals with supply and demand, or how much of a product's available and how much of it is demanded. The fundamental case for corn and soybeans, as this season begins, is different than it was last year, says University of Illinois Ag economist Daryl Good.
The start of the 2010 season for corn is characterized by expectations for more abundant supplies of old crop corn, an increase in planted acres, and a more favorable planting season than experienced in either 2008 or 2009. For soybeans, the 2010 season is starting with prospects for a small increase in acreage, modest inventories of old crop soybeans by harvest time, and increasing competition from a record large South American crop.
In the monthly report of world supply and consumption prospects, USDA projected September 1st, 2010 inventories of old crop corn at 1.9 billion bushels. That's 100 million above the March projection and would be the largest year-ending stock in 4 years. The March Prospective Plantings report indicated the U.S. producers intended to plant 88.8 million acres of corn in 2010. That's 2.3 million more than planted last year. Well, that same report indicated U.S. producers would plant a record 78.1 million acres of soybeans this spring, some 647,000 more acres than planted last year. When you couple that with the USDA's increased projection of soybean production in South America, Daryl Good says it makes for an uncertain 2010 price scenario that will be hinged primarily, as it is year in, year out, on the growing season's weather.
Corn and soybean yields will be primarily determined by summer weather, not spring weather. Demand and consumption will be influenced by world economic conditions, energy prices, crop production outside the U.S., and import policies of China and other countries.
The bottom line, then, not surprisingly it seems, is that the expectation should be for another year of very volatile prices.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, Hudsonville, Illinois, and Crescent City, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a production of Illinois Public Media and funded in part by you. Dial this number right now, 217-244-9455. A $100 bill would be a great pledge of financial support. The number again, 217-244-9455. Dave Dickey is in studio with us. He's Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. Dave, they can dial in at 217-244-9455, or if they're online, willpledge.org. It was awfully nice. We had one who must have been listening live to us this afternoon. That was kind of neat.
A live streaming call, I believe.
A live streaming call, but we have a whole lot of folks that listen to us overnight, and we'd like them to call in with their pledge of financial support as well. Part of that money, that 40% of the money that comes from our listeners to fund these programs, actually helps to pay for the internet and our ability to put these programs up there, we take up a lot of bandwidth, and it gets downloaded a whole lot of times, doesn't it?
It sure does, Todd, and it just goes to show you the value of the service. 217-244-9455 is the number to call with your contribution of financial support. Right now, we're in the midst of the Dave Dickey Challenge. You can get into Dave Dickey's back pocket, that be me, if you dial 217-244-9455 right now. If we hear from 20 of you this afternoon, I'll put $150 into the kitty. I believe in the service that much. Dennis Zellert, want to thank him, want to thank Lou Reed, want to thank Beverly and George Kafer, and I also want to thank Mike Hazel for making contributions in the fun drive today. By the way, 193 calls is the overall all-time record for how many calls we've received in an agricultural drive. We've gotten 128 thus far, so we're 68 away from the record. That's why it's so important that we make some progress this afternoon, get 15, 20 calls, get into Dave Dickey's back pocket. 217-244-9455 is the number to call. We accept Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express card. We hope that you will call soon.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Bob Baisdefer in Danville at 217-477-6016. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
This is the Closing Mark Report from Illinois Public Media on a Thursday afternoon. It's Get Into Dave Dickey's Back Pocket Day. He'll put some money in the kitty if 20 folks call this afternoon in support of ag programming. All you have to do is dial this number, 217-244-9455. Stay with us if you can, because in the second half hour of this program on many of these radio stations, we'll talk with Randall Gordon of the National Grain and Feed Association. I did that interview this morning. It's an awfully good one. On the line with us today at this point to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast is Pete Levitt. Good afternoon to you, Pete.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Now, farmers are watching the skies just a bit, and I think they wouldn't actually mind having a little rain to put some dust down.
Oh, I think we're going to do very well for the farmers for the next 6 or 7 days. First of all, it's warm, breezy, and even somewhat drier than desirable in a few spots weather, but it's helping to get rid of a lot of that excess moisture. That's coming through on good southwesterly winds today, temperatures well up in the 80s, approaching some record areas in parts of central Illinois for the date. Then we have a cold front. That cold front's now entering northwest Iowa. It's got some showers with it. It will push southeastward, enter northwestern Illinois probably around midnight or a little later than that, and push through the state during the day tomorrow. It's got showers and a few thunder showers with it. I think it'll pick up a little bit more moisture from the wet ground that it's passing over, so that it may be, the showers may be a few moderate ones in there, but they won't be lasting long. They'll be clearing out from northwest to southeast tomorrow afternoon and evening, and then the weekend just looks great. Much cooler air coming in, drier air, but not quite as cold as we've seen. The temperatures will get down into the 40s and then overnight lows in the 30s during Sunday and Monday. But after that, the temperatures will level off just below or at seasonal levels, and the dry weather looks to continue right through next week, maybe something coming along by the weekend. So that should be a boon to farmers. Not enough rain to really slow things down, and excellent prospects with drier air through next week.
Pete, thanks so much for being with us, and thanks for being with us all these years. We appreciate all the work you've done in providing us great meteorological expertise.
My pleasure entirely. Thank you.
Thank you much. That's Pete Levitt. He's an agricultural meteorologist. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report from Illinois Public Media each and every Thursday afternoon. Dave Dickey is in the studio, and he wants you to get in his back pocket this afternoon to take a little cash from him. You can do that by dialing 217-244-9455.
We need to hear from 19 more listeners this afternoon who are listening to the broadcast, 217-244-9455. I got a $150 bill. No, it's not fake money. It's real money on the table right now when we hear from 19 more callers, 217-244-9455. Give it that $120 level. When you do that, you'll get that great two-for-one restaurant card, couple of those, good for two-for-one meals across area restaurants. You also can put in for that egg hat that I helped design. It's a great hat just in time for spring, 217-244-9455. Those two-for-one cards will pay for themselves almost just as soon as you use it. We accept Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express card.
This is the Farming World News and interviews from the Land Grant in Urbana-Champaign. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Today we'll talk with Randall Gordon. He's the Vice President of Communications and Government Relations for the National Grain and Feed Association. Mr. Gordon, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having us, Todd.
Now, the National Grain and Feed Association was founded in 1896. It says it's a broad-based, nonprofit trade association that represents and provides services for grain, feed, and related commercial businesses. It has about 1,000 companies comprising some 6,000 facilities. These include country elevators, feed mills, export elevators, cash grain and feed merchandisers, commodity futures brokers, commission merchants, end users, grain processors, millers, livestock and poultry integrators, biofuels producers, and all those allied industries as well. It's a fairly large conglomerate of organizations. How did it all come into being?
Well, Todd, we as you mentioned, got started toward the start of the 20th century, back in 1896, and the first the interest in forming the association back at that time was really trying to bring some order to the marketing of grain. Back in those days, there were no grain standards on which grain was sold, and people actually physically would take samples of grain to Buffalo and put them in a trade show type of an environment and have buyers come around and look at the wheat or other commodities and try to ascertain who to buy from. So one of the founding missions of the association was to work with the U.S. government and USDA to develop the standards used now to buy and sell grain. We also were founded to try to bring some rationale to rail policy. The robber barons were going great guns back in those days, and there was real problems with rail service and rail issues, and so that's still an active focus of our association. We also formed back in early at our existence, when we first were formed, a system of trade rules and arbitration within the grain and feed industry, where our members arbitrate any kind of trade disputes that they might have with other members or other commercial companies through our arbitration system. It's a very cost-effective, timely and knowledgeable way to resolve those kind of disputes, and it's the oldest arbitration system in North America, so we're pretty proud of that as well.
What's highest on your priority list this week in Washington, D.C.?
Well, we're very active right now in working on legislation related to food and feed safety in the Senate. We and the American Farm Bureau Federation and the American Meat Institute have actually been leading a fairly broad agricultural producer, agribusiness, meat, livestock, poultry consortium of organizations at the national level, trying to weigh in on that Senate legislation. And this is the Senate's counterpart to a bill that was passed last July in the House, and we think it's a far better bill than the House passed bill. And it will basically totally revamp the way the Food and Drug Administration in our country addresses food and feed safety. It will basically require facilities that every step of the way, from the country elevator that originally takes grain from farmers all the way to the food processors and others, to develop plans to do hazard analyses within their businesses to try and control any kind of foodborne or animal-borne illness or hazards, put preventive controls in place for those, and develop written food safety plans. So it's a really big sea change in how food and feed safety is regulated in the United States. obviously, we're working very closely, as I mentioned, with the producer community on this issue because it has some potential repercussions on the farm. Up to this point, I think we've been pretty successful in trying to keep the reach of government off the farm, from everything from not having farm inspections per se and also not requiring a lot of record-keeping burdens on farm based on who they're selling products to. But those are some of the issues we're currently working on in some amendment language to make sure that that doesn't happen.
There's some problems this week in Washington, D.C., in the Senate on the bill as well.
Well, what is happening, Todd, right now is that the Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee actually approved their bill last fall, and what is going on right now is a development of a final version of the bill between Democrats and Republicans. This is one case where there is broad bipartisan interest in coming to agreement on a bill that will be the version that's actually considered on the Senate floor, which could occur as early as next week or prior to certainly before the Memorial Day recess. The current thinking is it could be next week or sometime in early May. And so we're trying to make what we think is a fairly good bill that Senator Durbin of Illinois initially introduced and has spearheaded, but it has a lot of bipartisan support from both Republicans and Democrats, trying to make that bill even better and more science and risk-based. So it doesn't put a lot of burdens on either agribusinesses from country elevators and feed mills all the way through the food processing system, and tries to avoid putting too many burdens on farmers as well, while still being a proactive approach to further enhance what we think is already a pretty safe food supply.
Well, there are some things that are happening in the Senate, and especially, and you'll have to help me out just a bit as I'm catching up on some of these things, related to BPAs. And I'm not sure exactly how to pronounce bisphenol. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah. So this is a chemical that's in food and beverage packaging, and that Senators Feinstein and Schumer and Feingold had put together a BPA Free Kids Act for 2009, and that's gotten bottled up in the food and feed safety bill in some way.
It has, Todd, and one of the everyone sees this food and feed safety bill as a very a bill that's very likely to pass with strong bipartisan support, and those that have been kind of out on the fringe with some of these other side interests are using this as an opportunity to try to wedge their issues into this bill, and this BPA issue is a very controversial one. It is a legal substance used in food packaging and plastics right now and other food contact surfaces. FDA has vouched for its safety, although there is a review going on by FDA now and also by the European Food Safety Agency, which also has approved the product previously, to make sure that it's safe. But we're very concerned, as are the grocery manufacturers and other organizations, about Congress short-circuiting this scientific review process that the FDA is already underway with, and there's also a study going on within the National Academies of Sciences and others, National Institutes of Health, I should say, to study the safety of this product. So we don't think it's proper for Congress to intervene and short-circuit that scientific review process of safety. And there's a lot of pushback on Senator Feinstein to not do this. Those negotiations are still underway to try to keep that out of the food feed safety bill because it would be a deal breaker in a number of ways for a lot of groups and could destroy the bipartisan support for the bill.
Right. Go back for me very quickly and in short form, summarize what the food feed safety bill is supposed to do. I understand, I think, what the BPA bill or the Kids Safe bill does. It's looking at things that are in the containers and says, we don't like these for whatever reason. And they're trying to move that through with the food safety bill. They sound like separate issues that should be taken up differently in your viewpoint. What does the food feed safety bill do exactly?
Okay. Well, Todd, it's really the basic principle behind the food and feed safety bill is to refocus our FDA's regulation of food and feed from more of a reactive approach where they do sampling and testing and try to catch problems after they're already in the marketplace to more of a prevention-based approach that puts the onus, as it should be and is, on companies to produce and manufacture and ship safe products. So the basic shift here is that it would require companies to develop food safety plans that evaluate the hazards that might exist in their operations. So, for instance, at a country elevator level, which country elevators already do, if mycotoxins are a problem during the harvest season, it would require companies to have procedures in place to check inbound loads and to sample and test those for mycotoxins. Again, if it happens to be a bad weather year where that's an issue. And try to minimize or prevent those hazards that could cause serious adverse health consequences or death to humans or animals from ever entering the food supply in the first place. So it's a real philosophical shift. And the other big thing that it would do is much broaden FDA's regulatory reach, where for instance, right now, under the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act, FDA has authority over adulterants that might exist once the product is in the food supply. But this bill would require them to, or would allow them to require companies, obviously, to have these food safety plans so that it would apply to all sorts of ingredients and raw commodities that previously have not been subject to specific standards. So that's the genesis of it is and the principle behind it. And again, it's very much a science and risk-based approach. It's not just to establish standards for standard's sake, but it would have to be based on the risk of the contaminant or hazard, and really just have companies develop their food safety plans, which most companies already do have, the ones that are involved in commerce at this point.
I'm surprised that organizations would want that type of regulations. What is it, if anything, is it that they're looking to avoid in the future?
Well, I think generally there is a philosophical belief that, and it wouldn't necessarily, Todd, I probably misled, that it wouldn't be a regulatory approach per se. The only standards that FDA would be mandated to create under this bill would be for produce, for fresh fruits and vegetables, leafy greens like spinach and lettuce, because there have been repeated food safety issues related to those commodities, and the associations representing those have actually supported the development of standards. But for other commodities like grains and oil seeds and raw agricultural commodities, it would only require that FDA be able to stipulate that companies do a hazard analysis, and it's up to the company to develop how to do that and what hazards are serious in their operations to address. It would allow FDA to make sure that those companies have written food safety plans that address those hazards. So FDA would be able to spot check and come in and say, well, do you have a written food safety plan, and does it address the kinds of hazards you think are important in your operation? So it does provide some federal oversight. And the other thing it does, it applies equally to both domestic and imported products. And we need to obviously be very careful as we address that we don't adopt provisions that would violate our trade obligations under the WTO or other kinds of trade agreements. And that's a big deal for agriculture, as you know, because of the importance of exports to U.S. agriculture. But it's really to lay this rubric of putting a responsibility on companies and businesses that are involved in the agricultural and food system to do their hazard analysis and to put effective preventive controls in place and manage their business in a proper way. And that, from a philosophical standpoint, as long as there isn't rigid government regulation, which this bill would not authorize, I think a lot of organizations are supportive of that concept.
You're listening to The Farming World from the University of Illinois, the land grant in Urbana-Champaign. This afternoon, we're talking with Randall Gordon. He's the Vice President of Communications and Government Relations for the National Grain and Feed Association. More with him in a moment.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to publicly funded Illinois Public Media. We're looking for you to give us a call this afternoon at 217-244-9455. This is quick, it's simple, and it's pretty easy to do. We accept Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express. If you get the opportunity, pick up the cell phone right now and do that. The number to call is 217-244-9455. We have a few folks I think you want to thank yet this afternoon, and we need some calls too. So if you haven't called in yet, 217-244-9455 is the number to call. Who do we have to thank, Dave?
Well, we want to thank Daniel Kelly, Kurt Holloway, Charles and Rennie Ehler, and Dwayne and Jody Gilliland, who called in the last few minutes. They're part of the challenge that's going on right now. When we hear from 20 callers before the end of the show, or as if you keep on dialing, as long as you keep on dialing, you can get into Dave Dickey's back pocket for $150. 217-244-9455 is the number to call.
Yeah, that number is 217-244-9455. Call in with your pledge of some financial support. If you listen online, you can do that at willpledge.org as well. We accept Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express. Dave Dickey and I like to think about the $100, $120 level. Less is fine. More is fantastic. All that really matters is that you call in and support WILL at 217-244-9455. That's 217-244-9455. This is the Farming World News and Interviews from the Land Grant in Urbana-Champaign. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Today, we're talking with Randall Gordon. He's the Vice President of Communications and Government Relations from the NGFA. That's the National Grain and Feed Association. When we left him, we were taking up some of the things that were happening in Washington, D.C. One of those, at this point, is a reform of the Conservation Reserve Corps program. NGFA has an idea of what it'd like to do with the Conservation Reserve, and it appears that the association would prefer the Conservation Reserve be more targeted. Is that correct?
That's a very accurate summation, Todd, of where our organization is on this issue. The 2008 farm law basically downsized the CRP because of budget restrictions more than anything else, reducing its size from about 36 million acres to 32 million acres in terms of a cap, a ceiling. So that's the maximum number of acres that can be enrolled now. There are just over 31 million acres currently enrolled based on some contract expirations that have occurred. But our concern right now is that USDA really use this as an opportunity to relook at the CRP and consider it in the broader context of all of the conservation programs that are very good programs that the department offers for working farmlands, in particular, like the Conservation Security Program and some of these other programs. I think our concern with the CRP has long been that when it was first established, in particular, it locked up a lot of pretty productive farm acres, particularly in the upper plains and the western part of the country. It's not as big a deal in the corn belt and soybean belt as it is in the wheat areas of the country, or what used to be the wheat areas, because it's had a pretty devastating impact on wheat production in the United States, or been a factor. So we would really like them to take a look at maybe downsizing the CRP, not going to that maximum 32 million acres, and really targeting the CRP on truly environmentally sensitive lands, either for erosion benefits that can be gained or water quality protections, buffer strips, grass waterways, and other techniques. But we think the farm technology and farming practices have changed a lot since the CRP was first created, you know, nearly 30 years ago, and that we can farm land in an environmentally sustainable way much better than we could back in those days. And we think we just have a real source of demand for those acres that can be farmed environmentally sustainable ways, and look at this as a chance for USDA to kind of really refocus on this.
The Conservation Reserve Program, as you mentioned, put into place some three decades ago or thereabouts, and the idea was to take those sensitive lands or lands that were more erodible than others and to take them out of farming, out of production for a definite amount of time. And then, of course, the producer or the landowner would be paid on a yearly basis to leave those out of production and couldn't use them for production at all. If most of the acres you're concerned about would be in the wheat belt, I'm surprised that you're really worried that they need to come back into production. There's an awful lot of wheat in the world. What kinds of uses do you see for them? Is it wheat or is it used for biofuels production? What kinds of things might happen on those farmlands?
Well, we think there is a lot of demand for biofuels as well as for growing our exports and for obviously a growing animal agriculture industry in the United States. And as you know, corn technology right now has become such, and the hybrids are so good these days that there's a lot of corn production occurring on acres that were previously devoted exclusively to wheat. And as we've seen, you know, Kansas is now growing more wheat than, more corn than wheat. And so we do think that some of those acres may go to corn production that we think is going to be necessary. And we're really concerned about the economic impact that the CRP has had in some of these rural communities. When you lock up land for 10 to 15 years under these CRP contracts, it really has an impact on local businesses that can operate in rural communities. And obviously there have been a lot of hunting activities and wildlife activities that have occurred. We don't oppose that whatsoever and think that a targeted CRP can be just as friendly to wildlife and hunting interests as idling a lot of productive farmland. So we just think we need an acreage base in this country. The rest of the world over the last 5 years or so has grown its acres that are planted to crop production by about 80 million acres. We've increased ours by about 1 million acres. And we're just concerned that we risk ceding that economic growth in agriculture to other countries if we continue to lock up 32 million acres for 10 to 15 years in a CRP. And frankly, we're also concerned because of budget implications with the federal deficit being what it is, that we've got a limited amount of money for conservation programs, and we're already seeing in the Senate some attempts to maybe fund child nutrition and school lunch programs, and which are very important based off savings from conservation programs. And so the conservation dollars we have are likely going to shrink, and we think they need to be better devoted to working farmlands so farmers can have and implement good conservation practices and be encouraged to do that on land that can be have an economic value in production.
Mr. Gordon, thank you so much for your time today, and we look forward to talking to you again in the future about the National Grain and Feed Association.
Thank you, Todd. It's been a real pleasure.
Randall Gordon is the Vice President of Communications and Government Relations for the National Grain and Feed Association. You've been listening to The Farming World. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.